Welcome to worship with us here at Christ the King. Wherever you're joining us from, however you are engaging in this worship experience today, it's Good Friday. And as we enter into a reflection and a meditation, a series of meditations, really, on the cross of Jesus and the walk that he took to get there, we're inviting you to go on a walk, a pilgrimage, with your bodies, or if you're watching this at home, a virtual pilgrimage with your minds, as we explore the stories of Scripture around Jesus's final day, and also explore the stories of racial injustice in our city and in the Twin Cities at large. We'll be entering into moments talking about our history and our present, and exploring some very present things, moving from here in our sanctuary in Bloomington to over to the Mississippi River, and then up into Minneapolis to visit the site where George Floyd was killed. And as we do that, we invite you to engage in these moments with a reverence and a reflection. As we seek to see Jesus, as Jesus shows up in the downtrodden, in the marginalized, in the oppressed, and as we engage in these stories to see the resonance that they have with the words that tell us about Jesus's story as well. So let us enter into this time of worship, into this pilgrimage together. We hear the Holy Gospel according to John. After Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples across the Kidron Valley to a place where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. Now Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, because Jesus often met there with his disciples. So Judas brought a detachment of soldiers together with police from the chief priests and the Pharisees. And they came there with lanterns and torches and weapons. Then Jesus, knowing all that was to happen to him, came forward and asked them, "Whom are you looking for?" They answered, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus replied, "I am he." Judas, who betrayed him, was standing with them. And when Jesus said to them, "I am he," they stepped back and fell to the ground. Again he asked them, "Whom are you looking for?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus answered, "I told you that I am he. So if you are looking for me, let these men go." This was to fulfill the word that he had spoken, "I did not lose a single one of those whom you gave me." Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it, struck the high priest's slave, and cut off his right ear. The slave's name was Malchus. Jesus said to Peter, "Put your sword back into its sheath. Am I not to drink the cup that the Father has given me?" So the soldiers, their officer, and the Jewish police arrested Jesus and bound him. I invite you to meditate for a moment on that scene of the dark garden at night, a peaceful place that Jesus goes to with his disciples, peaceful but also tense, tense with prayer, stretched thin by stress, awaiting the betrayal. And then suddenly it comes. Meditate for a moment on that scene. Thank you. we see the scene in the garden where Jesus is accosted by the mob with swords and torches and lanterns, and Jesus is betrayed by his disciple Judas. We see this place of beauty interrupted by sudden violence. You know, normally when we engage in a Good Friday worship service, it's actually one of our most scripted worship services. It's a meditative, but it sort of moves with a relentless energy towards the cross. And it's one that's not necessarily very participatory for the congregation. The leaders have generally done a lot of the leading of that service. And it's beautiful in this stark sort of way. As we gather in the empty sanctuary, the sanctuary that has been stripped around a simple cross. But today, our experience of this day will be a bit different. It will be interrupted. Interrupted from this place of prayer in our sanctuary, interrupted and inviting you and all of us to go out into the world and to see the ways that violence really interrupts our lives, has been a factor of our lives, has been part of how we've built our lives, and is a day-to-day experience that we wrestle with. As we go to these sites, we invite these scenes and these stories and this experience, this pilgrimage, to interrupt you, to make you pause, to make you think, to make you reflect on the meaning of the cross for us today.
Simon Peter and another disciple followed Jesus. Since that disciple was known to the high priest, he went to Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter was standing outside at the gate. So the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out, spoke to the woman who guarded the gate, and brought Peter in. The woman said to Peter, "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Now the slaves and the police had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing around it and warming themselves. Peter also was standing with them and warming himself. Now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself. They asked him, "You are not also one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I am not." One of the slaves of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Again, Peter denied it. And at that moment, the cock crowed. Meditate on Peter's experience that night. Engage all of your senses. Smell the charcoal fire, see the embers in the darkness, feel the touch of the frost, hear the questions and accusations, taste the words of denial. During the 20th century, racially restrictive deeds were a ubiquitous part of real estate transactions. Covenants were embedded in property deeds all over the country to keep people who were not white from buying or even occupying land. Their popularity has been well documented all across the country, including in St. Louis, in Seattle, Chicago, in Hartford, Connecticut, in Kansas City, and Washington, D.C. And it has also happened right here in the Twin Cities, including Bloomington. So imagine you're in the parking lot at Bryant Park. Look around you at the houses and the neighborhood that you see there. Every home that you can see from that parking lot is built in the 1940s and 50s, and every home you can see has this language written in its deed. No person of any race other than the Caucasian race shall use or occupy any building or any lot, except that this covenant shall not prevent occupancy by domestic servants of
scars of suffering. See there the tendrils of a human selfhood freed on its lifeblood.
First, they took him to Annas, who was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the high priest that year. Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it would be better to have one person die for the people. Then the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. Jesus answered, "I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in temples where all the Jews come together. I have said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who heard what I said to them. They know what I said." When he had said this, one of the police standing nearby struck Jesus on the face, saying, "Is this how you answer the high priest?" Jesus answered, "If I have spoken wrongly, testify to the wrong. But if I have spoken rightly, why do you strike me?" Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Then they took Jesus from Caiaphas to Pilate's headquarters. It was early in the morning. They themselves did not enter the headquarters so as soon to avoid ritual defilement and to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate went out and said to them, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered, "If this man were not a criminal, we would not have handed him over to you." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourself and judge him according to your law." The Jews replied, "We are not permitted to put anyone to death." This was to fulfill what Jesus had said when he indicated the kind of death he was to die. Then Pilate entered the headquarters again, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate replied, "I am not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here." Pilate asked him, "So you are a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." Pilate asked him, "What is truth?" Meditate on Pilate's hanging question. What is truth? What truth does Jesus' trial uncover about Jesus, or about those who were in power and wielded authority, like Annas and Caiaphas and Pilate? What truth does Jesus' trial uncover about you? About our world. In September of 1805, Zebulon Pike met with a group of Dakota leaders at the island that we now know as Fort Snelling, at the confluence of the Minnesota and Mississippi rivers, a great place of cultural significance to the Dakota people. They called this area Wetatanka, and the confluence of the water, Badote. It is now called Pike Island. Pike recorded in his journal that two of the seven Dakota leaders had agreed to sell the site so that the U.S. could build a fort and promote trade in exchange for an unspecified amount of money. Pike valued the purchase at $200,000 in his journal. Upon parting, Pike left $200 worth of gifts and allowed the traders that accompanied him to leave barrels of whiskey, leading some writers to characterize these gifts as the purchase price. Later, the U.S. Senate added an amount of $2,000 to the treaty, completing the forceful purchase of the sacred land by paying 1/100th of the estimated value. 15 years after the Pike meeting, the U.S. returned to build Fort Snelling on that site. In their report to Congress on these treaties, Commissioners Alexander Ramsey and Luke Leah write, "It was our constant aim to do what we could to break up the community system among the Indians and cause them to recognize the individuality of property. If timely measures are taken for the proper location and management of these tribes, they may, at no distant period, become an intelligent and Christian people." The purchase of the land at Fort Snelling is just one of a number of interactions that Native American people had with the powers and authorities of the U.S. government. The trials they faced as a result of these interactions were many and often resulted in displacement, cultural genocide, and death. What truths does history tell? What truths does it uncover about our past, our present, and ourselves?
Thorns not its own, all tangled in its foliage, our greed has stopped it, our despite has choked it. Yet look, it lessens, grief has not destroyed it, nor far consumed it.
After Pilate had said this, he went out to the Jews again and told them, "I find no case against him, but you have a custom that I release someone for you at the Passover. Do you want me to release for you the King of the Jews?" They shouted in reply, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now, Barabbas was a bandit. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged, and the soldiers wove a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they dressed him in a purple robe. They kept coming up to him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and striking him on the face. Pilate went out again and said to them, "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no case against him." So Jesus came out, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." When the chief priests and the police saw him, they shouted, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him. I find no case against him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, And according to that law, he ought to die, because he has claimed to be the Son of God. Now, when Pilate heard this, he was more afraid than ever. He entered his headquarters again and asked Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. Pilate therefore said to him, "Do you refuse to speak to me? Do you not know that I have power to release you and power to crucify you?" Jesus answered him, "You would have no power over me unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." From then on, Pilate tried to release him, but the Judeans cried out, "If you release this man, you are no friend of the emperor. Everyone who claims to be a king sets himself against the emperor." And when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus outside, and he sat on the judge's bench at a place called the Stone Pavement, or in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation for the Passover, and it was about noon. He said to the Judeans, "Here is your king." And they cried out, "Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him!" Pilate asked them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but the emperor." And Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. Meditate for a moment on a word.
Thank you.
here at the Henry Whipple Building in East Bloomington. The federal building here, this is where ICE brings their detainees. Migrants who have come searching for a better life, that are rounded up, snatched out of life, sometimes snatched from their cars, snatched from their day-to-day experience, and brought here to face a judge, to face a courtroom, to face deportation. In the last years, many undocumented immigrants have been detained here in this building and have been detained suddenly, have been not allowed to have access to their families, to have communication. Their hearings have been held, and many have had their deportation orders signed and then immediately carried out. You'll notice how close the Henry Whipple Building is to the airport. People are taken away and put onto planes without even an opportunity to say goodbye. When Jesus is taken in that middle of the night, when he is snatched from that place of prayer in the garden and brought to trial, and then put out in front of people and have received that sentence of crucifixion, he is whisked away very quickly. It all happens very quickly. How quick he goes from being in a place of comfort and friendship at the table to a place of pain and suffering. It's hardly a chance to speak to his loved ones along the way. What face was he looking for in the crowd? What faces are the people that ICE rounds up looking for in a sea of unfriendly faces?
It wrought his mercy, justice and deliverance, taking no pain up into wooden circles. At its own center, rings of our oppression, outward growing.
So they took Jesus, and carrying the cross by himself, he went out to what is called the place of the skull, which in Hebrew is called Golgotha. There they crucified him, and with him two others, one on either side, with Jesus between them. Pilate also had an inscription written and put on the cross. It read, "Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews." Many of the Jews read this inscription because the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city, and it was written in Hebrew, in Latin, and in Greek. Then the chief priests and the Jews said to Pilate, "Do not write 'the King of the Jews,' but 'This man said, I am the King of the Jews.'" Pilate answered, "What I have written, I have written." When the soldiers had crucified Jesus, they took his clothes and divided them into four parts, one for each soldier. They also took his tunic. Now the tunic was seamless, woven in one piece from the top. So they said to one another, "Let us not tear it, but cast lots for it to see who will get it." This was to fulfill what the scripture says. "They divided my clothes among themselves, and for my clothing they cast lots." And that is what the soldiers did. Meanwhile, standing near the cross of Jesus were his mother, his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing beside her, he said to his mother, "Woman, here is your son." Then he said to the disciple, "Here is your mother." And from that hour, the disciple took her into his own home. After this, when Jesus knew that all was now finished, he said, in order to fulfill the scripture, "I am thirsty." A jar full of sour wine was standing there, so they put a sponge full of the wine on a branch of hyssop and held it to his mouth. When Jesus had received the wine, he said, George Floyd was arrested for paying for cigarettes with a forged $20 bill. Within a half an hour, he was dead. He died from asphyxiation with the knee of an officer, Derek Chauvin, on his neck, and two others pinning down the rest of his body. It was a brutal sight. His body was pinned down on cement, and the view of a worried crowd and bystanders yelled and pleaded for help. Some of the crowd even caught these events on camera, as many of you have likely seen. Here were George's last words. "I can't move. Mama, I can't. My knee, my neck, I'm through. I'm claustrophobic. My stomach hurts. My neck hurts. Everything hurt. I need some water or something. Please, please. I can't breathe, officer. They're going to kill me. They're going to kill me, man. Come on, man. I cannot breathe. I cannot breathe. They're going to kill me. They're going to kill me. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Please, sir. Please. Please."
Since it was the day of preparation, the Judeans did not want the bodies left on the cross during the Sabbath, especially because that Sabbath was a day of great solemnity. So they asked Pilate to have the legs of the crucified men broken and the bodies removed. Then the soldiers came and broke the legs of the first and of the other who had been crucified with Jesus. But when they came to Jesus and saw that he was already dead, they did not break his legs. Instead, one of the soldiers pierced his side with a spear, and at once blood and water came out. He who saw this has testified so that you also may believe. His testimony is true, and he knows that he tells the truth. These things occurred so that the scripture might be fulfilled: "None of his bones shall be broken." And again, another passage of scripture says, "They will look on the one whom they have pierced." Meditate now on some of the messages that you see around George Floyd Square. Some of the protest messages written in ink or paint or marker. Which ones speak to you? What do they say?
"Another world is not only possible, she is on her way. On a quiet day, on a quiet day, I can hear her breathing. Hear her breathing."
breathing. Hear her breathing. Another world is not only possible, she is on her way. On a quiet day, on a quiet day, I can hear her breathing. 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 Another world is not only possible, she is on her way. On a quiet day, on a quiet day, I can hear her breathing. Another world is not only possible, she is on her way. On a quiet day, on a quiet day, I can hear her breathing. Hear her breathing. Hear her breathing. Another world is not only possible, she is on her way. On a quiet day, on a quiet day, I can hear her breathing. Hear her breathing. Hear her breathing. Another world is not only possible, she is on her way. On a quiet day, on a quiet day, I can hear her breathing. Hear her breathing. Hear her breathing.
The fist statue that stands at the intersection of 38th and Chicago was put up in its current iteration just this past Martin Luther King Jr. Day by a collection of local artists made out of metal. It replaces one that showed up last year made out of wood. And it shows up in this spot, in this intersection, where people of color, in the days after the killing of George Floyd, would gather and would take turns speaking and listening, speaking to their truth, speaking their experience, sharing their struggles, and finding ears to listen. And speaking and sharing those stories, they practiced an act of defiance. The fist itself shows a representation of defiance. It's defiance in the face of forces that would seek to dehumanize them, dehumanize all of us, dehumanize people by violence against them. The fist is a claim of humanity for us all in the face of all the forces of the world that would say otherwise, that would say some people are worthy of humanity and worthy of personhood, and others are less worthy, are less valuable. The lie that some don't deserve it, don't deserve our compassion, don't deserve our care, don't deserve our friendship, don't deserve our love. The fist statue stands here speaking to that defiance. When Jesus died on the cross, the scriptures name numerous passages that were fulfilled in his life and in his death. One that stands out to me is this: none of his bones shall be broken. That bit of prophecy is a word of defiance. It's a word that no matter the struggles that will seek to crush Christ, seek to crush the work of God, the bones, the structure of it, will not be broken. He might be pierced, but he won't be broken. It is a defiant prophecy, and one that is fulfilled. No matter the death that God experiences in Jesus' death, the structure of God's love, the defiance of the violence that the world seeks to do against God's beloved remains.
This is my ending, this my resurrection. Into your hands, Lord, I commit my spirit. This have I sought for, now I can possess it. This ground is holy.
After these things, Joseph of Arimathea, who was a disciple of Jesus, though a secret one because of his fear of the Jews, asked Pilate to let him take the body of Jesus. Pilate gave him permission, so he came and removed the body. Nicodemus, who had at first come to Jesus by night, also came, bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes, weighing about 100 pounds. They took the body of Jesus and wrapped it with spices in linen cloths, according to the burial customs of the Jews. Now there was a garden in the place where he was crucified, and in the garden there was a new tomb in which no one had ever been laid. And so, because it was the Jewish day of preparation, and the tomb was nearby, they laid Jesus there. As you know, in Minneapolis, there is a cemetery that has been named Say Their Names Cemetery, which commemorates 150 people who have been unjustly killed, many by law enforcement. There are 150 headstones in this cemetery bearing the names of these folks. I invite you to say their names with me as you watch this video of the cemetery. Sandra Bland, Yvonne Smallwood, Brianna Taylor, George Floyd. Philando Castile. Kwesi Ashun. Ayana Jones. David McCatty. Amandu Diallo. Tayana Blanding. Byron Williams. Miriam Carey. Christian Taylor. Emmett Till. Laylene. Clifford Glover. Jewel Dexter. Julian Dawkins. Akai Gurley. Atatiana Jefferson. Rayshard Brooks. Eric Benford. Dahl Lewis. Troy Robinson. Dante Shannon. Corey Jones. Jamar Clark. James Brissetti. Laquan McDonald. William Chapman. Jeremy McDowell. Ernest Satterwhite. Izelle Ford. Devon Bailey. Ahmad Arbery. Alton Sterling. Keith Childress. Mahulase Boulder. Willie McCoy. Walter Scott. Terrence Sterling. Sean Furr. Taisha Miller. Eric Harris. Emantic Bradford Jr. Ralph Bell. Chantel Davis. Timothy Russell. Antoine Covington. Alfred Sanders. Dontre Hamilton. Gregory Hill. Anthony Hill. Jordan Baker. Rakia Boyd. Michael Brown. Tyrese West. Gregory Gunn. Eric Garner. Stefan Clark. Jonathan Farrell. Donald Ivy. India Kagar.
Marlon Brown. Jamie Johnson. Mark Henderson. Keith Scott. Timothy Goff. Tamir Rice. Jordan Edwards. Hardell Sherrill. Tyler Woods. Ronald Madison. Betty Jones. Freddie Gray, Claude Rees, Corin Gaines, Oscar Grant, William Green, John Crawford, Nikea Moody, Gregory Vaughn, Melissa Williams, Megan Hockaday, Ashton Barnes, Richard Reicher, Kayla Moore, Marcus Golden, Henry Glover, Tanisha Anderson, Michelle Cousseau, Margaret Mitchell, Philip White, Neera Johnson, Jaffert Smith, Natasha McKenna, DeRavis Rogers, Justin Fields, Travis Jordan, Brandon Weber, Trayvon Martin, Patterson Brown Jr., Dante Parker, Sean Bell, Daryl Hawkins, Ronell Foster, Tony McDade, Demetrius Sessler, Kendall Walker, Tashi Brown, Samuel Anenson, Isaac Aiden, Terrence Franklin, Latanya Haggerty, Demetrius Hill, Dontalo Wright, Jerome Mosey Sr., Keo Crockett, Larry Jenkins, Kobe Heisler, Kevin Rhines, Terrence Crutcher, Botham John, Thurman Blevins, Jordan Davis, Kenneth Dukes, Tysel Nelson, Mario Benjamin, DeCynthia Clements, Michael Wesley, Melvin Fletcher Jr., Brian Quinones, Justin Teagan. Say their names. Jesus of Nazareth.
It's likely that some of these names you know and some you don't. Google one of the names you don't and learn their life story. Jesus, who was also unjustly killed by law enforcement in public view when he was hanging on a tree to die, powerfully grounds our faith that God is with us and with all those who suffer unjustly and grieve needless death. Jesus' death had an impact on people. Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus were among those who cared and tended to his body. What impact does Jesus' death have on you today? What impact do the deaths of all those unjustly killed, especially the lives of BIPOC individuals, have on you?
Take it free.